You are now listening to Well-Fed Women, the show that's been radically changing the way women perceive health, fitness, and their bodies since 2015. I'm your host, Noelle Tarr. Submit your questions to wellfedwomen@gmail.com, and you can keep up with the show on Instagram at wellfedwomen. Welcome to Well-Fed Women. This is episode number 255. We've got a wide variety of topics today. I'm here with Steph, and I'm excited to get started. We're going to discuss the health implications of food freedom, getting your period back postpartum after struggling with hypothalamic amenorrhea, and what to do when you're struggling to maintain strict elimination diets for health reasons. I think we're going to have a lot to say, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Before we jump into the show, I want to thank our sponsor, XPT Life. Y'all, this app is incredible. I know so many of you love fitness and engage with physically demanding activities like CrossFit or cycling or lifting weights or, you know, strong from home, plug. But you may be overlooking a huge part of that training, and that is your breathing. And I know that you are breathing because you are listening to this. I'm more talking about performance breathing and how that can be incorporated into your fitness endeavors. So you can actually improve your breathing, which will improve your performance in just 5 to 10 minutes a day with the XPT Life app. Again, XPT Life app. I think I say that too fast. The average human takes over 23,000 breaths per day, and that can really add up, especially when we're talking about fitness endeavors and recovering properly. So This app, the XPT Life app, it has breathing programs. It has pre-workout breathing programs. It has like breathe hold ladders. It has belly breathing training. And really, I was introduced to breath work before I had my children's when talking about labor and delivery and all of that kind of stuff. And I think I really was turned on to the impact of how your breath can really control your nervous system. And so it's makes total sense to me, and I can definitely see how really focusing on controlling your breathing, both during your workouts and after workouts, before and after workouts, could really impact your ability to oxygenate your body and perform in your training. So if you want access to the program for free, go to xptlife.com/wellfedwomen. You'll download the app. It's totally free. They have so many breathing workouts on there for you to try immediately. Again, that's xptlife.com/wellfedwomen. I am telling Steph we're a little late to the show today. I like hossed down food. I was sort of intermittent fasting. I'm doing this thing where it's like motherhood intermittent fasting, where you wake up and you basically take care of everybody else first, and then you clean up, and then you put your first kid down for a nap, and then you're like, oh, it's 11 and I should probably sit down and eat breakfast. So I just did that. So I am definitely fasting today. I did a 16-8 window. Steph, how are you doing?
Have you ever like looked at goat GIFs? Like they're just, or listened to the goat version of Taylor Swift songs? Like that's how I feel today.
Fascinating. I was like, hey Steph, how's it going? You're like, hey. Yeah, I'm fine. I just like raced my bike all the way over to my room so we could record. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I just finished eating. Okay.
Well, I wanted to explain to you why I was late, and I'm very sorry.
Well, okay. See, we both were on the same wavelength because we both were late. I was like trying to eat so fast, and I like jumped on coughing, and you were like pissed off at the world. Talk to me about why you're in meh mode.
Well,
We didn't have time to get to that.
Right. So I really like to get things done when they need to be gotten done. And I usually have a plan for how I want to go about this. And sometimes when things feel especially important or time sensitive, it becomes very emotionally important for me to stick to my plan. And so in 2 weeks, I have this, I haven't been talking about it that much publicly because it's such a big deal to me. I have this really big competition in 2 weeks for like young scholars in the UK. And there's a lot of things I have to prepare for it, like academically, and I'm trying to do that. I also have to find a like perfect outfit to wear, because like the way you look for this matters. So today, one of the things that I was rushing around trying to do is like find a jacket in my size. And it's just, I'm having a really hard time, and it's frustrating because this is something that has to be done and is in the way of me doing other things. And I have a bunch of friends going out of town, and we have like these surprise goodbye parties. And I found out the boo is coming to visit me today, which is lovely. And also was not originally a part of my plan. And so
she's like, great. I'm so excited you're visiting.
And yes, and I am. But that means that I have to do a lot of internal work, like reframing my timeline, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And like looking online for tweed jackets. So.
Yeah, I will say, shopping is really frustrating. It's really frustrating because if you go and you look, and then just like all the time is wasted if you don't find what you were looking for. That's what it feels like. Yeah, done.
That is exactly how I feel about today.
And then I was like, okay, so we're doing the second document first. And you're like, oh my gosh, we're doing two today? Yeah, we have to record two back to back.
Yeah,
sorry,
we are.
Jeff. I'm sorry.
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
We're still a little bit behind from my sickness, which I am feeling a much better. I appreciate everybody being like, oh, I'm so sorry, and trying to help me discover what the heck is going on. I still have some canker sores, but they're clearing up. And I actually found out that a side effect of ibuprofen is canker sores, and I've been getting more lately, and I think that that might be why. Because I took ibuprofen postpartum to manage the pain, and then I took it every time I got mastitis, because I was just in so much pain, breastfeeding wise. And so I'm wondering if that has triggered it. Anyway, I'm now doing all the research on canker sores, which is, they're basically like, we don't know what causes it, but you know, I have a few ideas. So I'm doing a lot of things now to try to fight the canker sores. Can you talk to me about Noom?
Why don't you just keep bringing up things that are like really good for my mental health and anxiety?
Okay, so I read this post on Instagram about you talking about Noom, and I will be honest, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, because I haven't looked into it, and I didn't see the ad that you saw. Like, I was just like, oh my gosh, punch me in the head.
Yeah.
I keep seeing the same. They are on it. They are on it hard with the Bravo TV app. They do a lot of like commercials. And so it's like, you know, they show all the people like, oh my God, I never was happy with myself until I found Noom. And so, you know, it's just like all these personal stories. And I see the same commercial over and over and over again. And this guy's like, they call it a cognitive behavior approach. I just say it works. You know, it's like that kind of stuff. And I'm like, oh God, like, please help us. So what ad were you served? Because I haven't gotten served in ads. Or what did you see in Instagram? And yeah, talk to me about that. And did you look into it at all, like what it is?
I have been getting on my social media feeds, like, it's nice to know that the algorithms can be really wrong, you know, like they don't know you that well. And I've been getting a lot of ads for like new year, new you, new body online. And I'm like, uh-uh. that's not my shtick. That's not what I'm about. And so Noom came up on my Facebook and said something about like personal triumph. And it's that feeling when you get into your skinny jeans again, and like that feeling when you like are feel as sexier than your friends or something like that, you know? And I was just like, no, like I'm so tired of our society thinking that, you know, like what you need to be is fitnessy or slim or whatever. Like those are the kinds of achievements you want in your life. I just feel like we're so massively neglecting the things that are important, like being a good human and doing good things. Like why is that not our priority anymore? Like it's just not. As our culture, people are like, even people's New Year's resolutions, they're not like, like I'm gonna try to be a better person. You know, I just, it makes me sad. So I just happened to write a handful of angsty, fiery, you know, it was inspirational, I think, like, stories on Instagram about how I just like wasn't about the Noom thing. And I don't like to participate in call out culture, and I don't like to lead with accusations, you know, but it's very clear what they were doing with the messaging in this ad. And I'm just like, I'm not about it. You know, I'm the kinds of pride that I feel are predicated on me working really hard to not care about my body size, right? And working really hard to prioritize, like, again, being good and other people. And so I just, that's what I choose to advocate.
Yeah.
Not new.
The one comment about, like, the feeling, it's the feeling you get when you fit back into your skinny jeans or whatever. I mean, that is so, one, shallow. Okay, maybe not. Like, yeah. I understand. I get it. Because I've had a lot of experience in the past 2 years of my body changing sizes, and it's nice to fit back into some pants again. So I get it. But what they're trying to inseed in us is that, you should be fully focused on fitting back, going back to something, not getting jeans that fit you now, but going back to some sort of pair of skinny jeans, which, by the way, usually is some pair that we wore, you know, in high school or college or whatever, when we were borderline, you know, had major disordered eating patterns and was under eating mm-hmm. and over exercising. And we could actually maintain all of that under a very, very slim and very not slim, but thin grasp of on control for a very small period in time. And so it's trying to get us solely focused on going back to that and being so focused on that being our goal. That's what we should be focused on in the new year. We should be focused on external clothing, not to mention, like, not even our body size. Focus on that piece of clothing. Focus on the clothing size, which makes no difference. It's a piece of fabric, and getting back into those jeans. And by the way, that's fleeting too, because we know, like, bodies change and body sizes change all the time, and that's normal. Bodies fluctuate. So, like, what are you saying? We should be evaluating our worth and our happiness based on whether we fit into this piece of fabric or not? Like, that's just what did it for me when I mm-hmm. saw that. It just is sad. And I get what, it's like, yeah, I appreciate you saying that too. Like, we should be focused on, like, being a better people. Like, there's a great meme that I just posted on Instagram, which is like, I don't really care how much weight you lifted in the gym. I care if you held the door or not for, like, the person that was behind you, you know, like,
yeah.
Be kind to people, be kind to one another, and stop focusing on, like, these external numbers, which don't really mean anything about your heart and your character and your morality and all that. So anyway, I was appreciative of you coming out with that. Now, when you say I'm not a part of call out culture, what does that mean?
So I recorded a podcast this morning with a brilliant woman who just talked a lot about how we are so polarized. And I think our culture is, it's so easy to feel defensive and angry. And we sort of define ourselves by this and that, you know, you agree with me or you don't. And I understand that we all have values and we cherish them. And when they're trespassed, we feel compelled to defend them, right? But I really so strongly believe that we need to lead with questions and lead with empathy and lead with sort of giving somebody the benefit of the doubt and trying to understand where they're coming from. And so in the case of Noom or anybody saying anything online, I would always want to lead first with, like, oh, why do you think that's a good marketing approach? Why do you, do you think this is healthy? Do you think this is this or that? I like questions. I don't normally like to go online and be like, I'm so angry about this thing. I know that anger is, like, cool. And if I expressed anger online, I'd probably have 10 times as many followers as I do, you know, mm-hmm. like, as a philosopher, I'm serious. You know, if I were really angry about this religion thing or this atheist thing or something, like, you can get a lot of followers that way. But I think the right thing to do, the responsible thing to do, is to sort of hold that in check while you try to, you know, be empathetic. On the other hand, you know, sometimes this was in service of a larger point, and Noom, like, was, I can be empathetic to their needs while at the same time saying, hey, by the way, this advertising is harmful, you know, and here are the reasons I think so. If you have a defense, I would love to hear it, you know, mm-hmm. but yes. So that's what I mean by I don't want to participate in call out culture.
Yeah, we definitely have a, our society now loves to throw out accusations without understanding anything. Like, people are very quick to accuse you of X, Y, and Z without actually knowing anything about either what you're going through, what you are a part of, your business, what your mission is, like anything like that. So, or, you know, dieting, your diet, what you actually believe about things.
Yeah.
I think it's unfortunately, it's one of those things that, again, there's so many downsides to social media, but it's one of the downsides of social media is that so many people can just throw out things that they would never say to people in person or to somebody's face.
Mm-hmm.
Easier to do it behind a keyboard or in a DM or whatever.
Yeah. And it's easier, like, and it's so easy to read these things and get furious, you know, instantly. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you hear somebody say something in person, you see the nuance in their face, you hear their nuance in their tone, you know, like it's just a more full, complex picture. And it's, it's really unfortunate. We're just so radically oversimplified online.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Shall we jump to questions?
Yeah.
Cool. Question number one is from Lindsay. Hi, Noel and Steph. First, I recently purchased Beauty Counter and I'm loving everything I've gotten so far. I'm looking forward to trying others. Thank you for sharing about it. I have two pretty different questions for you. Number one, my boyfriend's two boys have been raised to be vegetarian because their mom is a vegetarian. They're old enough now where I feel like they can make their own decisions around their diet. I want to provide them with insightful and accurate information about pros and cons of both eating meat, not eating meat. I've tried to do my own research on this, but it gets really confusing really fast. It seems there's a lot of conflicting research and opinions on the meat versus no meat topic. I was wondering if you have any tips on one, to find accurate and helpful information, and two, not to sound like I am lecturing them on their eating habits or think I disapprove of them. I currently have a male family member who's hounding me to try fasting, and I'm getting really frustrated that he won't accept my response of, I have tried it, it's not what's best for my body. I don't want them to feel the same frustration when I talk to them about their diet choices. I just want to provide some facts for both sides. Number two, I cannot begin to explain how much you both have helped me in my health journey. I was definitely under eating and over exercising when I first started listening to the podcast, and I've been able to very slowly change my ways. I have worked to getting to a good place of not being scared of food and being comfortable in my own skin for the past few years. I have had the mindset of, if a margarita or a cupcake is in front of me and I want to enjoy it, I am going to. But overall, I am still one of the healthiest eaters of all of my family. I still exercise regularly 5 to 6 times a week, but more yoga and walking rather than the HIIT classes. I recently went to the doctor for yearly physical and my results were not great. I have had high blood pressure for the first time in my life. I also no longer have a scale in my home and I've learned that I've gained some weight. These numbers will not stop haunting me. I truly thought I was healthy and doing great, so those numbers have been a shock. I feel disappointed in myself and feel my old fear tendencies coming back. I'm just so confused on how introducing sugar and alcohol every once in a while into my diet can make that big of a difference. So my question is, how can I get started? How can I start to meet in the middle of my new and old habits while keeping a healthy mindset to get back to good health? Any insight would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Shall we go one item at a time?
Yeah. Let's do first question first, because this, I feel like this could be one of those things that we could probably discuss for like an entire
day.
Yeah. let's tackle the first one first.
Yeah. I think when we look at vegetarianism, there's three main arguments for and against. One is your physical health, two is sustainability for the planet, and three is animal rights, ethics and the like. So far as physical health goes, my personal opinion is that it is probably best to eat at least some meat and animal products. I think you can be healthy without it, but you need to be really diligent about covering the bases that you're missing otherwise, right? There are a lot of nutrients such as DHA, you know, found in fatty fish, or choline found in eggs, for example, that are very hard to find in good quantities in plant-based sources or like vitamin K2, you know. But this, if you're going to be eating animal products, it's really important to try and prioritize, for the sake of your health, getting them from grass-fed, local organic sources and what have you. If you can't, that's okay. But like the K2, you can only get from, say, a grass-fed cow's butter or liver. So I definitely think that's worth paying attention to in terms of health. Some good resources to look into, I think, that are pretty fair in the matter are like the Weston A. Price Foundation stuff. I think that they're pretty open to talking about animal products and alternatives. I mean, they're pro animal products for sure, but I think that their reasoning is sound and quality. I wouldn't necessarily turn to vegetarian sources for health information because, again, that is very murky and very clouded by this whole public obsession with vegetarianism and purity. In terms of, and then there's the other stuff, the sustainability and the animals' rights. Sustainability is very interesting. There's tons of data that demonstrates that when you reduce your meat consumption, you reduce your water consumption, you reduce your carbon footprint. But going vegetarianism doesn't mean that you're necessarily cleaning your ethical slate in terms of the environment, because you're still participating in monocultures, which, you know, raise the land, they deplete the soil. And so many people argue that it is better for the environment to participate in local agriculture, including animal husbandry, in order to make the soil and the ecosystem as healthy as possible. But on the other hand, that's not entirely feasible for the 7.5 billion people we have on the planet. You know, like the large scale farming is part of the reason we're able to feed so many people. And so else the many will argue that the argument for consuming local produce is sort of one that comes from a place of privilege, because it's not, you know, it's not sustainable if everybody in the world were elevated to that level of income and able to do that. Now, of course, the income stuff is complicated, but that's a broad overview of pros and cons on both sides. I sort of fall in the middle personally. I try to eat my minimum protein and meat requirement. And when I do it, I do try. I'm not always successful, but I do try to do it with as, you know, as much engagement with local and whole stuff as I can. And then there's animal rights stuff. And that's a really big issue. Animals are treated horribly, just horribly. And I personally think that if you're not willing to know where your meat comes from, like, you shouldn't be eating it. You know, if you're not willing to see how your meat dies, you shouldn't be eating it. I feel that very strongly. And if you are, fine, you know. And there are tons of books on this. What are some good resources in terms of animal rights? I mean, there are some very, like, pro vegetarianism, pro-veganism books like Eating Animals that can teach you about the horrors of industrial farming, and that's really important. But there are many people in the world who think that, again, sustainable, local, caretaking husbandry can be very ethical and sacred in its own way. And we might point you towards Diana Rogers' work. I think she's still Sustainable Dish. I'm not sure. Clark Farm, Sustainable Dish. She's a really, really big advocate of eating meat. Kind of vociferous, very passionate, I'll say. So those are sort of, that's how I see the landscape. I know I've talked for a while. I don't know where you want to weigh in.
I would only add that I love Joel Salatin and Polyface Farm. He's doing amazing things in terms of ethical treatment and sustainability, and like what he's doing with his farm and rotation. He's really passionate about teaching other farmers, but what he's doing with his farm is creating incredible, like, there is no drought on his farm, and he's creating this like incredibly nutrient rich soil, which he has like overburden every year. So he is giving back to the land, and animals have to be a part of that. And so he's written a lot of books. If you just go to polyfacefarm.com, they actually deliver food all over the state, many states. I order food from them. They're like 3 or 4 hours away from me, but they do drops and deliveries, and they're big advocates, and they do a lot of education around farming. I will also say, just as like an aside, you know, you have to be very cautious and aware, and I think you are. You're being very intentional with not, like, I don't know if I would bring up their mom's diet and the way that they're eating unless they ask for your opinion. I know it's a sensitive subject, but if I had my children and I was raising them on a paleo diet and then somebody's girlfriend was like, well, you should really eat vegetarian, and was like trying to talk to my kids about the benefits of vegetarianism, I'd be like, okay, cool. So maybe talk to her first about it. If she's okay with you having those discussions with them. And I'm sure you've probably talked to your boyfriend about this, so it's important for him to be on board too, just so that you all have synergy and it's not some weird tension that isn't necessary and you don't need in your life. I don't want anybody to feel like, you know, you're going behind her back or you both are somehow against her because she's vegetarian. I'm sure you've all talked through that, but just to be super intentional with, like, how these discussions happen, because it is, they are her children as well. So you do need to kind of include her in those conversations. And of course, if they ask you and want, maybe you're cooking dinner and it comes up and you say, do you want some? And, you know, they say no. Or maybe they say, sure, let's try it. Or maybe you offer to take them to like a local farm or something like that. You know, I think there are ways to definitely spark the conversation, without having to kind of forcefully be like, well, here's some reasons why I think you should eat meat. I don't know how old they are, but that might not totally go over positively depending on their age. But I love that you're being very intentional, and I love that you're cautious of that. And I'm sorry that you have a family member who's continuing to try to push their health agenda on you. So I know you get it. Let's talk about food freedom and just how that incorporate, you know, food freedom and the health implications of that. I'm really interested to hear, like, you unpack your thoughts about that stuff.
Wait, in regards to point number two?
Yes. Question number two. Yep.
Wait, you hear me say this every week? I mean, I'm just kidding. It's always every single, you know, we do a lot of talking about the same themes, but every case is different, and we can, you know, get to different levels and corners of these sorts of things. Food freedom is so interesting, and you and I have spent so much time sort of trying to figure out how do you be physically healthy and feel free to eat like whatever you want at the same time, like not feel restricted. And it is always deeply individual. The longer I spend as a human, the more I realize I always, you know, we always said,
wait, is that a different way of saying as I get older?
Well, yeah, but you know, I sometimes if I could use two words, I prefer to use 20. So you should just watch Noelle like editing my book. She's like, cut this paragraph, cut that paragraph.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no, and that's an ongoing project. I have like 20 New Year's resolutions. That's one of them.
Okay.
So the longer I've spent being a human, the older I get, the more I realize that what we have said many times is actually true, that even just a little bit of worry about food or anything that you're consistently worried about makes a difference. And your mindset is so important. I think I told y'all that I've been meditating very regularly, actually. And I have been understanding more and more that we trick ourselves into believing things that we don't need to believe all the time. And we don't even necessarily know that we believe them. And I bring this up because with respect to food, for so many years, I was like terrified of certain foods and I couldn't eat them. And I look back and I wonder, it's so hard to know how much of that can be helped by having a positive mindset. Now, obviously, like biochemical changes need to happen, dietary changes need to happen. But I do think feeling free or in control or positive, like all the good stuff is really, really good for you. And So I do eat things that wouldn't necessarily go on a, like, yay, this is great for you list, you know, like deep fried food at the supermarket. I buy that sometimes, you know, and nothing like it. I don't die. And when you have specific health conditions that you're managing, manage them assiduously. And when you do it, know that what you're doing is you're making positive choices for yourself. You're not restricting yourself. You're not taking things away from yourself that once made you happy. You are making choices that are trying to heal you. And it's not perfect. Don't beat yourself up. You know, if it doesn't work perfectly, you just have to keep going, you know, and keep trying. And that's for that specific instance. And if you're not working on a specific health condition, then focus on what you're including, you know, keep including. I have a bag of kale a day, you know, so keep including the good stuff. And let yourself have some freedom. And we have also said rest is so important. And just because you're not sprinting, you know, for 45 minutes at a spin class or whatever every day, doesn't mean that you don't have fitness, you know, and you can spend whole months of your life just walking or just doing yoga or recovering in bed from something, right? Like, it's all extremely context dependent. And so I just so much believe that the mental wellness that comes from the, you know, autonomy and choice and freedom is really, really good for you. And then the obsessive stuff starts to melt. It takes a while, but, like, you know, that frozen layer that makes you, like, hate giving up certain foods or hate restricting certain things, it melts. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, huh, like, I can eat when I'm hungry and stop when I'm full and not panic about it. And that's very, very general in terms of how to, like, meet in the middle. I don't know. I think that that's it. Like, you have to have patience and go slowly. And, well, not everybody does, but some of us do. And I have a feeling that you might, Lindsay, because I do. And from your question, like, try, you know, just try and see how it feels and then go back. And by the way, like, adding in, what are we talking about here? Like, adding in some sugar or alcohol. I mean, if you were a really, really low carb eater, I don't know if that's a part of the question here at any point. I don't think so. Then, yeah, like, there is some work that you can do to help make that easier for you, for your body. The last time Noelle and I chatted, we talked about keto for a long time and how to transition off of it. And that could, you know, have implications for your blood pressure and for your weight and for stuff like that. So there is always tinkering that can happen, but just do it from a place of, like, peace and calm and, like, I'm going to figure this out. And you don't need to be obsessive in order to do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, the alternative isn't all of a sudden I need to go back to being super obsessive and in this, like, hell of like a mental prison, trying to restrict everything, over exercising, under eating. That's not the alternative, because that's not healthy either. We know that. Steph and I have been huge advocates of, you really have to view your health as physical, mental, and emotional. And just because your blood pressure goes up doesn't necessarily mean it's because of the cookie or the cupcake that you have once a month. It could be because of a lot of different things, to include worry and anxiety and not sleeping and all that kind of stuff. So, and stress, you know, and poorly managed stress. It can be a lot of things. So just because you're perceiving it as, like, oh, I've done a lot of work mentally, I have some more food freedom, I've been more flexible, oh my gosh, now that's causing all these health issues. It's not a one-to-one thing. And so I love Steph's recommendations of, like, coming at the tweaks and looking at this new picture from a place of calm and saying, okay, what can I tweak? Because we are not anti-tweak. There's a huge misconception that all of a sudden food freedom means you eat anything you want all the time, even if it's bad for your health, even if it's not right for your autoimmune condition or your, you know, your gut issues. Like, oh, well, I can't do food freedom. Like, I wish people who talked about food freedom knew the things that, you know, that I can't have stuff. No, that you can have healthy, intentional restriction from things because, like, in a healthful way, because that's right for your health and your body. You're not coming at it from a a place of deprivation, and this is what I should be doing, and oh, I'm going to gain weight, and no, and it's not this diet mentality of, oh, these foods are bad, so I should stay away from them. Instead, you're pursuing changes that are right for your body from a place of, I'm cool with this, I know I'm not a bad person, I know my worth isn't in whether or not I avoid nightshades or not, or whether I avoid gluten or not. I just know that I feel a lot better when I don't eat gluten, so I choose to avoid it. If I want to eat it, I can, but I'm choosing to. That is food freedom. When you get to choose and come to your eating habits from a very neutral place and a place of, I want to feel good and I want to do what's right for me. So I think that sometimes it gets misconstrued as you have to either be 100% on this bandwagon of all the restrictions and under eating and over exercising, or food freedom, which is eat all the cupcakes all day, every day, because that's what true food freedom is. And that's not, it's not at all what we're saying. Sometimes it takes, you know, a few days of eating cupcakes to realize, oh, cupcakes aren't really that great and I don't want them anymore. Because we've talked about that. We talked about this in the book. We've talked about this many times on the podcast, where when you really restrict something, you get stuck in this cycle of, oh my gosh, all I want is the cupcake, right? Like, you just can't stop thinking about it. You get stuck in this cycle of, I want it, I want it, I want it. Finally, you crack and you eat it. And then you feel so much shame for eating it because, oh, it's a bad food and it's going to make you quote unquote fat and all the things. And then you go back to trying to overly restrict it. And so a lot of these foods that we elevate are because we have just overly restricted them and put them on this pedestal. And so, again, all of my thoughts being dumped out, but I do think you can definitely start to tweak things a little bit, see what's best for your body, know that you can eat a cupcake and drink a martini when you want to, and I don't think you should deprive yourself of that at all, but you can also, most of the time, eat in a way that's right for your body, and that may take shifting your macronutrients a little bit, you know, trying maybe a lower carb diet, or if you're doing lower carb, trying shifting over to maybe more protein and just focusing on quality foods and, you know, maybe just test a few things out for a couple weeks. In our book, we have a specific butter lover's plan and a bread lover's plan, and it all is focused on quality, understanding that foods aren't bad for you or wrong, and your morality is not attached to that, your worth is not attached to that, and we kind of guide you through how to make tweaks. The book is called Coconuts and Kettlebells, by the way. But that's kind of the place that I hope everybody can come from when making shifts to their food. Food freedom is being able to make the shifts that you want to make because they're right for you, and being able to eat the things without feeling shame or guilt or being stuck in diet culture. So let's do question number two. This is from Mary. Hi, Noelle and Steph. I have a question about HA periods and postpartum. I recovered from hypothalamic amenorrhea in 2018 by decreasing exercise, gaining weight, eating lots of carbs. I got pregnant on my first cycle, and now I'm 10 months postpartum. We are wanting to get pregnant with number two soon. I still have not recovered my period from baby number one. I'm still breastfeeding. Baby is sleeping through the night, nursing four times a day, and eating solids very well. My question is, will I need to get back to the same weight as I did to recover from HA to get my cycle back again? My exercise has remained low-key. Walking, I do not restrict any food groups, but don't consume much dairy because I simply don't like it. I eat carbs, I eat plenty of fruits and vegetables, healthy fats. I drink one cup of coffee in the morning. I've tried so hard to gain weight, but I feel like I'm always full, and I know that breastfeeding is taking extra calories. I truly will do anything to get my period back and get pregnant again. I would love to hear your thoughts.
I personally, when people are like, I just can't eat more, I'm like, man, I can always eat more. But so personally, it's hard to resonate. There have been maybe a handful of moments in my life where I've been like, I'm really full, I don't want to eat anymore. Like four, you know, in my 31 years. I respect what you're doing. I think 10 months is not a ton of time. I think your data from your previous experience means A, that your body is quite sensitive to stress and body fat, you know, and leptin. And B, you can regain your fertility using these methods. I think your walking, yoga, and maybe a little bit of high intensity stuff once a week is probably a very good place to be in terms of your exercise. I'm glad that you're eating carbs and proteins. Healthy fats Okay, let's throw some like animal fats in there. Chris Masterjohn is a really, really big fan of animal fats, and I was skeptical for a long time, but I've been eating a lot of animal fat for the last year, and I don't know if that's a part of why I sleep better and why I feel so much more satiated when I eat, although it's not apparently not a problem for you. Animal fats do contain a lot of fat-soluble vitamins that can be really important for you and can help you absorb things like vitamin D. Now, I know that you're eating other fats, but if you're just throwing some, you know, nuts on a salad or, you know, avocado, then that is maybe not quite enough. So I would consider some fattier cuts of meat. One cup of coffee is probably okay. Some people are more sensitive to it than others. If you were drinking coffee through your last recovery from HA, then it's probably okay. But adrenal overfiring can be, you know, that can be a result of coffee, and it can also be harmful to, you know, your reproductive system if you're really sensitive, and it seems like you might be. So that's something to consider. You could maybe transition to like a cup of black tea and a cup of green tea a day, maybe, which would put you at about 60% of the caffeine profile of coffee. I think 10 months is probably not enough time, and if I do think that you probably need more calories. Like it seems like that's what you think. and I would go ahead and like throw some more fat in your meals, you know? And that could help, you know, you can adding fat to a meal won't make you have to eat like a much higher quantity of food. And so you could maybe get more calories for the same quantity if you just throw, you know, a couple of tablespoons of butter in your dinner or whatever. I would do that and really focus on the density, you know, and let yourself eat sweets or whatever, right? What your body needs right now is calories. And if you don't have a health problem that you're trying to manage, then, I mean, you can stay paleo, you know, you can have paleo cookies or whatever, but, you know, coconut ice cream, something like that, adding some calories, however you can make them palatable for you, I think could be really helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I think 10 months is totally normal postpartum, especially since we know that your body is prone to hypothalamic amenorrhea. It's going to be harder, especially when you're breastfeeding. You're just like giving out the nutrients. I do think like not having a period postpartum, and I know that you women can still get pregnant unexpectedly because you have your first you ovulate all of a sudden and then you didn't know it. And so, boom, you get pregnant. I know that that happens. But I think this absence of ovulation postpartum is definitely nature's way of helping your body restore, get back its nutrient status, get back to a healthy place. Like, I do think it's nature's way of saying, like, you are super depleted. You just had a baby and now you're giving out a ton of nutrients through breast milk. It's not time to get pregnant right now. Like, and so I actually think it's funny. Like, I just got my period back, which I'm 7 months postpartum. This is when I got it back with Stella. So it's totally just my body. I was like, really, body? You think I'm ready to do that again? Because I'm definitely not. But I think it's a very natural way for your body to allow you to have more time to eat all the things, to get more nutrients in, to focus on getting more calories, maybe getting your body weight up so that you can maintain a healthy pregnancy in the future. So just give it a few more months. Most women, half of women, get their period back after 12 months postpartum. So when they're full-time breastfeeding. So you're not doing anything wrong. This is just totally your body's natural response. And I do think, you know, eating some paleo treats may be helpful in assisting you in getting your period back, your calories up, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to discuss how to navigate the decision to pursue strict elimination diets to heal your body. This podcast is brought to you by Fabletics. If you haven't gotten a pair of Fabletics leggings yet,
What are you waiting for? Go to fabletics.com/wellfedwomen. There you'll find beautiful leggings, tops, and accessories for a wide variety of activities. And they are size inclusive, so you'll have a variety of sizes to choose from. I love the way these leggings fit. They have killer colors and prints. They are high quality, high performing, and high-waisted if you want. That's just my preference. Right now, you can get two leggings for only $24 by joining the VIP program. To check it out and get custom outfit recommendations based on your own preferences and activities, go to fabletics.com/wellfedwomen. And we're back. Okay, so last question is from Barbara. First of all, I love your show. I'm coming to you too because of your honesty and also your acknowledgement that diets can cause disordered eating. My background, I have had type 1 diabetes since 2009. I didn't know it at the time, and they told me it was type 2. Over time, my body eventually killed off enough of my pancreas for me to require insulin, and I found out I was autoimmune type 1. I tried everything to fix it. Low-fat diets, low-carb diets, paleo diet, keto diet, autoimmune paleo elimination diets, and none of it helped. Eventually, I just accepted I needed insulin for the rest of my life, and I had some low thyroid activity as well, but it improved with insulin. Basically, my life improved with insulin, so I gave up eating clean and decided to live a more normal life. I was happy without the stress of following a special diet and went back to eating a standard American diet. I had a baby 4.5 months ago, and now my thyroid antibodies are through the roof. I am torn between wanting to try and heal my body and wanting to live a relatively normal life. The diets in the past have led me to a dark, isolated place, and it didn't change my condition. I was eating so disordered and stressing so much about every little thing. My question is there any benefit for an autoimmune condition of including nutrient-dense foods, prioritizing sleep, and managing stress, but without avoiding gluten and dairy? I know most autoimmune diets don't recommend 80-20, but I want to know if I could benefit from it if I also accept that I may be on meds for life. I believe in paleo, and I apply some of the concepts to my life. I just couldn't make the restrictions work with my life at the time, and the thought of trying to restrict myself again makes me anxious. I'm at the point I'm on insulin for life already, so I wonder why do I do a strict diet just to avoid Synthroid? Sorry, this is such a long question. I feel so overwhelmed and guilty about all my decisions. Any Hashimoto's resources you could point me to would be helpful, as I do want to have another baby eventually.
Wow, it's heavy.
Yeah.
Okay, so you would be, I think, better off if you reduce stress, prioritize sleep, and focus on the foods that you include. You know, I spent a whole question saying that I think your mental state is really important, you know, and so I do believe that, you know, that the freedom and the peace that you can get from doing that could be helpful for you. That being said, I actually don't know if there's any information on whether you can like really overcome something like an autoimmune condition just by focusing on including and not on excluding. You know, there's a ton of debate as to whether gluten causes issues or gluten sensitivity is a symptom of underlying issues, right? And I would guess that it's pretty dialectical, and maybe gluten isn't the cause, you know, but it can be a serious, you know, problem. And so I think what I might personally do in this circumstance is, if it makes you really anxious, the idea of having to restrict your food, stay on the meds and work on relaxing, do like really serious work, you know, on your relationship with food or what have you, and return to the question of an elimination diet. Yeah, in 6 months or something, to see if that can help. Because the thing is, like, you're staying on this med and it can help you manage this one condition, but this one condition is a result of leaky gut, which can cause other conditions, and which is a symptom of like systemic inflammation. So ultimately, having an autoimmune disease increases the likelihood that you'll have another autoimmune disease, right? And we don't want you to keep adding autoimmune diseases that you have to manage. You know, it's really, really unfortunate that is the state, but these diseases are really symptoms of an underlying, you know, immune flare-up or gut inflammation, you know, what have you, all of these different things. So I would probably want to revisit healing that underlying inflammatory problem. But I also understand that mental health is extremely important in doing that process. And so I would foreground the mental health stuff and be very, very gentle. You know, let yourself stay on your meds, watch your health very closely, make sure nothing catastrophic is being triggered, and gently move towards, you know, trying to work with those underlying problems. And I know that they're hard and sometimes it can take a very long time, but I think it's worth it for the sake of your, you know, more long-term health.
Yeah, I like that idea of mindset first, diet shift second, because there's no reason you should be feeling super anxious around making shifts to your diet. You know, there's something going on there. Obviously, you have your own history, and so it is going to take some work to let go a lot of those, here's what you should be doing. This makes you a good person. This makes you a bad person. You assuming that your worth is tied up in this. So, and the fact that you totally were like, I'm done, and you just like dropped the bomb and left, you know, I can tell that there's a lot of deep-seated, unfortunate, just like heaviness, and I can tell it's very hard for you to like navigate these waters, and it shouldn't be. It should not be that way. You should be able to, with a healthy mentality and being free of this like very oppressive diet culture, this diet mindset, you should be able to say, huh, let me make some easy shifts to my food. Maybe I'll make a couple things here or there and see if how I feel overall. That's where I would move forward, is let me make some shifts and see how my body feels, because I absolutely 100% believe focusing on high quality foods and being intentional with following an approach that makes you feel well. Like if you avoid dairy or you avoid grains, if you see that that makes your body feel really well, there are a lot of alternatives. Now, in today's day and age, we have amazing companies and brands and Simple Mills and Siete and all these like really cool companies that are doing foods that are grain free and dairy free. And so it should, if you want to, when you come to a better place, it should be something that is easy and enjoyable for you. And you can explore and say, huh, let me try to shift my quality here. And let me try to, you know, go to sleep earlier here and maybe wear some blue light blocking glasses and reduce my stress here and see how I feel. Like, it should be like a positive thing. I don't think an autoimmune paleo approach is an absolute necessity, nor do I think it heals all autoimmune conditions. I would highly recommend following Jessica Flanagan of The Loving Diet. She actually does a lot of stuff on this, which I find really interesting. She has kind of come out and talked about how the AIP diet is sort of like a very restrictive approach when you don't know what's going on. And it's sort of just like the worst way of troubleshooting, because truthfully, a lot of things, a lot of times it's not any, like, let's just say maybe you are sensitive to some sort of nightshade, like a tomato or something. You don't necessarily need to restrict all of those foods to figure that out. And the reason why you're sensitive to certain things, like Stephanie said, is because of leaky gut. And the root cause of leaky gut can often be things like, you know, infections in your gut, SIBO, dysbiosis. And so doing the AIP diet is now sort of like an outdated approach. Now when we're talking about, oh, we have access to things like the Dutch test and like a gut test that we can find infections and that sort of thing. So AIP is not the most efficient way. It's very hard for people, and it still doesn't quite get to the root and help you understand what's actually triggering and causing some of your issues and conditions. And so I do believe little tweaks can absolutely help. Like, there's definitely ways that you can improve your gut health. And there's filling your body with nutrients, reducing inflammatory foods, helping manage inflammation, which will help your hormones and managing your stress. That will also help manage your hormones. Anything you can do to reduce inflammation, manage hormones, reduce stress, that is going to positively impact your overall health and your conditions, your disease. diseases. So I would absolutely recommend doing any and everything that you can with when your mindset is right, doing those things that make you feel really well, and maybe consider working with somebody one-on-one, because I think that it gets really dark and scary when you're by yourself. And I don't want you to go to that dark place ever again. That's not healthy at all, and that's not going to help you. So it's okay to be on medication when you have diabetes and when you have Hashimoto's. And a lot of people have to be on medication for life, and that's okay. But there are also things that you can do to make you feel really good. And hopefully support your health long term so that you can feel better and, you know, and not feel tired or achy or whatever, and all the things that sometimes come with those really debilitating diseases. Hashimoto's resources, I love Isabella Wentz. We've interviewed her on the podcast before. She has an incredible book on thyroid health. Just Google search Isabella Wentz or you can search for her books on Amazon. I have a friend, Elena Haber. I interviewed her about her experience with Hashimoto's during her pregnancy. And she is on Instagram, Grazed and Enthused, and she has a Grazed and Enthused website. And then Follow the Loving Diet by Jessica Flanagan, and I will probably try to bring her on because I think she's got so much to say, really interesting insight about mindset, autoimmune conditions, and just how to treat the root cause of them, as opposed to just like doing a catch-all thing like the AIP diet, which again, I know it's helped so many people, so I'm not trying to poo-poo it, but if it's not working for you, don't push it. So
I like that.
Okay. Good.
High quality advice.
Yeah. She also talks about this really interesting thing where, you know, food restriction. So with the AIP diet, if you really restrict food and you actually have an infection going on in your gut, it actually can result in loss of tolerance of that food. So when a lot of people talk about pulling foods out and then not being able to put them back in, it's usually because of an underlying infection, which I know a lot of people struggle with when they do a very restrictive protocol. Then it's like they can't pull foods back. They cannot put foods back in without, you know, they call it loss of tolerance. So anyway, I think she's a genius, and I'd like to pick her brain a little bit, but that's what I have a podcast for, huh? That's what we get to do here. Okay. Anything else from you?
No.
Okay. Let's go. I'm going to leave. You can leave now and go ride your bike back to wherever you were before. Just kidding. Giving you a hard time. For more from Stephanie, go to health2empower.com. For more from me, go to coconutsandkettlebells.com. You can buy our book, Coconuts and Kettlebells, by going to coconutsandkettlebells.com/book. By the way, we have a Facebook group. Join us there, the Well-Fed Women Holistic Health Community. We will post about it in the show notes. Click the link, ask to join. We will see you there. Talk to you guys next week.